Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Right, Cian Tracy is here from The Independent to talk to us about the weekend's rugby. In a broad sense, really, before we get into any of the details of the individual matches, an opportunity for Irish rugby to maybe, I don't know, purge some horrible recent history? Or is it just like one of those horrible things that's happened in your life you need to continuously talk about and talk about and talk about and talk about until somehow it can't do you any more damage?
I think in one way it's probably a blessing in disguise that you have the Champions Cup back, but I don't know, certainly from a journalistic point of view and covering it, it is very hard to just forget what happened in the last couple of months. And I think the players will be different, every player will be different in terms of how he deals with that. I think the guys who were front and centre, maybe the less experienced ones, might find it tougher to get over it, because I'm not sure how you can just switch off and forget that possibly the biggest moment in your career passed you by without firing a shot. But then again, the page quickly turns. They were all in training last week, you know, training again this week. So, yeah, look, it is probably a blessing in disguise, but we can't just forget and write off, you know, the last couple of months, and there could be a hangover. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say if you're one of the players that Warren Gatland name-checked with Joe in studio during the week about, oh, this guy might be in the Lions. It was interesting that, did he name-check anybody who started games for Ireland? My Ringrose, I suppose.
Well, that was just Gatland in a nutshell, wasn't it? Yeah. Like a veiled dig. But I mean, he was absolutely totally right. One of the biggest black marks against Ireland at the World Cup was not picking players on form. The guys he picked, you know, Larmer. Joey Carby, Larmer, Andrew Conway. And like, I think you're dead right when if an Andrew Conway, who is the form winger and has been the form winger in the country for the last few months, doesn't need any extra motivation. But when you hear Warren Gatland name checking you for a Lions tour, that can only do wonders. So I think in that sense, for those guys, Rhys Ruddock as well, they're coming back with such a massive point to prove that why they should have been given more of a chance, because to be fair, they couldn't have done much more in Japan to get that chance.
Yeah. What could they have done? Was it just, it was written beforehand that you're not going to make it, even though you're tearing up trees, you're killing your direct opponent, you're not dropping the ball, knocking it on like everybody else, you don't have the dropsies, what's going on?
I think you have to look at the evidence. I mean, certain players were picked without showing form, and you go back to Rhys Ruddock, I think Peter O'Mahony would probably be the first to admit he wasn't in form, he didn't have a good year. Rhys Ruddock had his injury problems in the early part of the year, he came back, he was absolutely outstanding for Leinster in the Pro 14 final, and he carried that on into Japan. But there just didn't seem like there was a trust there, you know, in terms of in picking him. And I think Jordan Larmer was the same. And Gatland, when he was talking to Joe, you know, was speaking very highly of Jordan Larmer. And I think everyone from the outside does. But I don't know, it was just when it came to Joe Schmidt didn't trust him. Maybe it was his age. And it was made to look even more stupid than what it was, because you look at what the All Blacks did, and they basically ripped up their whole backline and picked two rookie wingers. And OK, they came unstuck in the semi-final, but what they did to Ireland was just sensational. And I think that is one of the biggest things that Irish rugby needs to learn now going forward. And, you know, it's interesting to look at the Champions Cup teams in terms of players being picked on form, because if we're not going to learn from that now, then when are we?
Rory was in during the week, and he made the point that Leinster learned this after, was it the Glasgow game a couple of years ago in Pro 14, where they put the returning international straight back in the team, and the players who got them to that point in the season didn't end up getting picked. The game went south, and afterwards they were like, why did the game go south? Well, we didn't pick the players who were in form. We just picked the players who, and maybe it's unfair on the internationals in that it's going to take them a little bit of time to get back into what it is to be a Leinster player in that squad. I don't know. There's a quandary, because these are obviously players who are at the elite level in Ireland because they're international players, and the players who are behind them haven't been selected, and yet somehow they've got the opportunity to get form and to play themselves into it.
It just sends out such a terrible message in terms of any working environment. You know, if a person who is next to you isn't performing as well as you, and yet you know, and I think some of these guys knew coming into that quarterfinal that, you know, no matter what they did in the pool games, that Joe Schmidt had his team picked in his head. And in fairness, we all could have predicted it from a long way out. And that just sends out such a poor message. And I think Leinster have been conscious of that now. The one thing you'd have to say about Leinster is they do have the strength and depth coming through, that it is a little bit easier compared to other provinces, that they can put their trust in these players a little bit more. And you look at the way they've started the season, they've had 6 wins out of 6, 5 bonus points. And it was interesting to hear Stuart Lancaster talking this week, again getting at that point about picking players on form. He reckons that the the gap between these guys who are coming back and the younger guys who are now a season on than what they were last season, that gap has narrowed now, and they can't just disregard what they've been doing, because again, they're young guys, they've been keeping the show on the road, and I think they need to be rewarded for that.
Yeah, when you think back to how Matt O'Connor ultimately lost his gig, it was partly to do with the fact that he was complaining about the international system when he knew what the system was when he got there, but it was mainly to do with his inability to win games while the senior internationals were away during the Six Nations. That has not been an issue for this current team. I don't think it's just because the players are much better now and the strength and depth is there. I think it's because that coaching ticket is a fairly well evolved and they know exactly what they're doing.
You have to go back to Leo Cullen's first season in charge when Bath came to the RDS and he played, I think it was five rookies at the time who all made their European debuts. They're now starting players, and that was his first season in charge, you know. So you talk about buying into this culture and trying to change the mindset. Leinster did do that, and look, they're reaping rewards. You're seeing the team that they're playing tomorrow that they've selected. Again, it's easier for them because they have more options, but I think Irish rugby as a whole, and that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for Andy Farrell now, is having that bravery to go with guys and not just on reputation because of what they've done in the past. Because if this year taught us anything, and I was probably as guilty as anyone else, when the form isn't there to suggest that the team are good enough to pull a big performance out of the bag, it's unlikely to happen. And while I think it was, we got caught up in it, probably most of the journalists, while we were over the week of the All Blacks game, because we were, you know, we were following that team for 6 weeks, and the week of the All Blacks game, they were genuinely confident. You know, every single one of them that came out, there didn't seem to be any sign of nerves, and you buy into that, whereas I think people at home were more like, come on, like, they're not going to beat this All Blacks team. And
where's your evidence for that? Where's your evidence for that?
Exactly, that's the biggest lesson of this year. When there's little evidence to suggest that they're going to pull out a bag, they're probably not. So that is one of the biggest challenges I think facing any further.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's I don't think anybody minds being wrong when you've made an evidence-based conclusion or prediction, and then the team suddenly shocks you with a performance from nowhere. We should be beyond, in all of our sports culture in Ireland, given how we understand the evolution of the football team, when you see how teams have evolved in GAA and the rugby team, you can't just be going, well, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, we're going to beat the All Blacks because we did it 18 months ago or a year ago or whatever that was, as opposed to everything, every single piece of evidence in the build-up to that was that we were nowhere near that standard anymore.
Yeah, we were hopeless romantics, really, weren't we?
Yeah, exactly. And sure, look.
Story of our lives.
I suppose it's part of the Irish culture. Yeah. For this competition, then, I'm still not buying the Saracens. We're not that into this. You know, we've got this other thing that we need to do. Like, this is the only trophy that they have a realistic... Well, sorry, this is the Cup in England, but this is the biggest trophy they have an opportunity to win. They're the defending champions. Their strength and depth is amazing. They're clearly going to be okay with that 35 points because they're so far ahead of everybody else, barring some weird injury scenario, which, you know, maybe happens post-World Cup. But I think they are still to be reckoned with as a force in this competition, irrespective of the team they've picked this weekend. I also think that Leinster are probably a better team this year than they were last year, because that the point you made earlier, those younger players who are coming through are a year older, are a year more seasoned, and we are going to see some players emerge into our consciousness. So apart from those two, is there anybody else who are legitimate contenders for this entire competition?
Yeah, look, I think the final being on in Marseille is a huge, you know, bonus for obviously the French teams, and Clermont being back in the Champions Cup. It was so strange to see them in the Challenge Cup last year. They were absolutely brilliant. Like, they have so many class French internationals. I guess it is Clermont. You're always, you know, they do have the tendency to bottle it. But I think if you talk about Leinster being further along, I think Toulouse will be as well. They obviously came unstuck last season because they met Leinster, but this is a team who are also rediscovering their identity, and, you know, they're locked on 4 stars each, and like Johnny Sexton was talking about it last week, they're so motivated by that drive for 5. They want that 5th star, so I think Toulouse will be contenders as well. But the Saracens point is quite interesting, because I've been talking to a couple of people kind of in and around the setup over there, and they reckon that it is true, like Saracens are sticking to their word. I mean, the proof will be in the pudding, but they're not backing down from what they're saying. And, you know, they're saying that when they come over to Tumwin Park, all the internationals aren't going to be here. But can you imagine Mark McCall going into a dressing room to Mauro Toje and Owen Farrell and going, you're sitting this one out, lads? It's not going to work. And it's also a bit different to how the Irish promise work, because Saracens own these players. You know, it's not like England control them. So I think that those conversations would be very, very tough to have to these world-class motivated players.
Yeah, and I also think that the second-tier players at Saracens are great.
Of course, yeah. Like, I don't think people would be having too much sympathy if they're resting a couple of their internationals because and the funny thing is, like, you know, they've been found alleged breaching of the salary cap for the last 3 years. They've added three more internationals to their squad this year, so kind of already thinking, when's the investigation to this season, which hasn't happened yet, you know? So it's a bit of a crazy situation. And it does put a blight next to the Champions Cup before we even start that we're talking about this, because even at the launch last week, they didn't even turn up. It looked terrible, you know, the reigning champions not showing up. So it'll be interesting to see, but it definitely has a little bit of an asterisk next to it already.
Look, if they're true to their word and they play a weekend team throughout the whole competition, there's still a chance that they finish well in their pool, because Racing aren't going great guns. Ospreys, as we know, are a bit of a disaster at the moment. So it's really the games against Munster that they would only need to put the good teams in.
Yeah, and that it's going to come down to that, the back-to-backs. They're obviously going to Paris this weekend. You know, Racing didn't have a great season start to the season, but they've got all their internationals back, and on paper, that is a serious team. I wouldn't really... The top 14 at the moment is absolutely bizarre. The top four places are teams that you'd never predict. Lyon, Bayonne, Pau and Bordeaux, I think. You know, you would never expect them. And in the chasing pack, they're all coming, you know what I mean? Their players are filtering back now. They've had players all around the world at the World Cup. So I wouldn't read too much into Racing's domestic form. I think they'll be very, very strong. And particularly at the U Arena, they're very hard to beat there because of everything that throws up.
OK. If Saracens do play their B team, then everybody else should try and hockey them. Mm. And, like, keep running up the score. Don't be subbing off players and none of that stuff. But like, hockey them, like, annihilate them.
I'll believe that when I see it, a team hockeying, any of these teams hockeying Saracens, I'll believe it when I see it. But I'm like you, I'm still very sceptical that they're going to not go for this because, you know, like, look at the squad, Deb, look at the players they have.
Let's talk a little bit about Connacht, because this is it's a big couple of seasons for them, really, as, you know, we've seen the announcements for Akers down there and saying, okay, we are going to absolutely put some money into this to fix the sports grounds. They need to fix the sports grounds. And again, to talk about it during the week, it's like their training facilities aren't something that are attracting overseas talent to come. Oh, wow, you've already got an amazing setup here. They're selling Connacht on the basis that you live in Galway and you have a great time and the whole community is behind you. It's games like the European games this weekend where that needs to be an absolutely feverish place. Unfortunately, it's such an early kickoff on Sunday, but
yeah, it's not ideal, is it? I think you're right. And I know Bundy Aki came out, I think it was 2 years ago, and, you know, was quite public in saying that these facilities aren't good enough. And even during the week, you saw, like, the TV cameras and stuff were down there and they're showing clips of training and there was puddles everywhere in the pitch, and it's just not a great look. But look, they've kind of recovered from just a terrible season under Kieran Keane. Andy Friend has come in. He's been a breath of fresh air. I think the players really genuinely enjoy playing for him, and I think that will become more of a selling point. And obviously they are revamping the sports ground, which is so overdue. But I was down there last week for the Leinster game, and, you know, you're kind of still trying to ease yourself way back in after the World Cup and catch up, and the teams in Connacht were obviously going really well, and I was down there a few times last year, and there is a genuine buzz. But, and I was excited to go down and see how they were, and they were very poor, worryingly poor, against Leinster last weekend. Now, Leinster were very, very good, it must be said. And Connacht do have Ulton Delan back this week, but they're so short in that back.
Delan is huge for them because they had no second rows, basically.
Yeah. They lost their three first choice second rows. They ended up playing Sean O'Brien, who's a really exciting young flanker coming through, but they had to play him in the second row. He dislocated his shoulder a minute after coming on. They lost Finlay Beelum after 2 minutes, so they're down two tight head props. And this is a pack who, when all eight are together, you know, they don't have much coming behind it. So when you're missing a couple of key guys, they're really down to the bare bones. And you talk about, you know, the sports ground being revamped, but, like, if a situation like this had happened in another province, the IRFU would be coming in to help them. If it happened in Munster, let's say, it wouldn't have happened in Leinster because they have so much depth. But, like, I'm wondering why the IRFU weren't looking at this in the second row and, like, saying to a Ryan Baird, who's coming through at Leinster, who's an outstanding prospect, a certain future Irish international. He already looks like James Ryan. Now, we see Leinster have added him to their Champions Cup squad this week. But why not send him down to Connacht?
Maybe as a, here, don't even be thinking about it.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. But, like, why not send a guy like this who's ready to play, you know, professional rugby? He's played a few games for Leinster in the Pro 14. Because, you know, you have to be helping out Connacht if you're serious. And I don't buy into this sort of fact to get a super rugby journeyman down. And I know you have the issue of diluting the rivalry between the provinces, but I think a younger guy is a bit different if you're doing it for the betterment of Irish rugby, because this is a seriously tough pool that Connacht are going into. Andy Friend was very honest after the Leinster game, and he said, like, Montpellier would have been looking at this game as the blueprint, how to beat us, you know, just bully and dominate us up front. And if ever there was a pack that is capable of doing it, this Montpellier pack are monstrous. Now, you do have the whole thing, how will they travel, because Montpellier always flatter to deceive in Europe, but they are a huge, huge pack. And like you said, Sunday early kickoff, it's not ideal. The sports ground will still be packed out. I'm sure it'll be sold out. And it's great to have Champions Cup rugby back, but it looks like a very tough ask for Connacht.
Our rugby coverage is in association with Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. What is success this season for Connacht? I mean, obviously the Connacht fans are like, oh, last time there was a World Cup the year after, we won the league. Unlikely to happen this year. I think everybody else has kind of managed things a little bit better, and they're probably not as far ahead as... They're probably not at the end of the cycle with Andy Friend as they were at that stage with that current coach,
definitely,
Pat Lam.
Yeah, it's only his second season. I don't think any Connacht fans would disagree that they don't have the depth to challenge on both fronts. And while it is great to be back in the Champions Cup and everyone wants to be there, you sometimes wonder if they're better off just focusing on the Pro 14, you know, and try and give that a proper rattle. They've started really well. I think last week was a big wake-up call in terms of where they are in the grand scheme of things, because that wasn't even Leinster, you know, with their full team. So I think in terms of a successful season, I think they've got to be challenging for a playoff space in the Pro 14. And you know, getting out of the pool would be a great achievement. Will it happen? I'm not sure. That Toulouse team, like I said, I think are going to be thereabouts come May to challenge. And in Gloucester, you know, are massively improving as well. They've got a lot of big South Africans as well. So I don't think this pool really suits Connacht. But then again, if they get a result against Montpellier, you know, they're going to Toulouse next weekend, which is not great. You ask for starts. I guess at least they're at home this weekend, but it looks like a daunting enough pool.
I'm really keen to see how well Tyler Blendop plays over a period of time, because I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he establishes himself as the 10 over a period of time, and then suddenly it's like, oh, Joey Carberry's back. Maybe he can play somewhere else. Maybe we can get him on the ball all the time at 12 or 15 or who knows.
This Joey Carberry thing at fullback just isn't going away, is it? Look, my own personal opinion on that is, if that was the case, he would have stayed with Leinster and that they would have seen him as that. I think Joey Carberry is a 10. I think he's going to be playing 10.
Leinster did see him as that. Joe Schmidt didn't see him as that.
They did, but he sees himself as a 10. And I think, you know, you're looking at the next World Cup, I think all things being equal, if he can stay fit, you're going to be your starting 10.
But what if Blendahl's really good? Because he is really good. He's just never had an opportunity to show it.
He's had a few opportunities in big games, in Heineken Cup semi-finals, I remember, against Saracens. Look,
but coming back after, like...
Yeah, I think the one thing you have to say about Tyler Blaine, I was actually in Limerick this week. I'd never met the guy. He's been here a few years. I'd actually never met him, and he's a really impressive character. To come back from one neck injury is incredible. To come back from two is just actually remarkable. You wonder, and I was asking him, you know, is it even really worth it? Like, you know, he's got a young family and stuff. But fair play to him. I think he's 29 now. You feel like it's now or never for him. Because in fairness, he wouldn't be playing if JJ Hannerin was fit. JJ Hannerin has started the season really well. And there's a few players coming through as well. So, yeah, look, I don't think it weakens Munster severely, especially going to the Ospreys. He is a class player. And, you know, this is a guy who captained the New Zealand under-20s. He was seen as Dan Carter's, you know, replacement at the Crusaders. Now, a lot has happened in those few years. He's had really bad neck injuries, but they speak so highly of him behind the scenes. You know, all the time he was out injured, he was actually helping on the coaching side in video analysis. He actually reminds me a bit of Felix Jones.
So there's that possibility for him, yeah.
The way they talk about Tyler Blaine on now is how people were talking about Felix Jones when he was involved in that setup, because he obviously had his injury problems as well, but he was constantly there, you know, trying to learn in terms of coaching. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think he'll be helped, obviously, by having Conor Murray next him. But the one thing I think you want to see him do is sort of stamp his authority on the game and control it. You saw last week him creating a try for Andrew Conway. It was sensational. And he is capable of those moments. But it's when the game is in the melting pot, and it might not happen this weekend against the Ospreys. Munster will be hoping that it doesn't come to that. But you want to see him controlling the ball, you know, playing the corners, and probably haven't seen enough of that from him yet, but there is still time.
What is the Stephen Larkin blueprint, and when do we begin to see it unfurl? Is that like an 18-month project? Do we see it straight away?
I think we're starting to see signs of it already. I think the one thing about getting a coach like Stephen Larkin, because there was some suggestion that when Felix Jones was in last season coaching the attack, wasn't really doing a whole lot of it, because Johan van Graan was doing a lot of the attack. And he comes from the school of thought of Heineken Meyer, who's actually just been sacked from, or stepped down from Stade Francais. And apparently, like, Paul O'Connell got out of there because he didn't have control over what he was doing. So my point is, Van Graan learned everything he knows from Heineken Meyer back in the Blues in South Africa. And I think maybe he was trying to control too much last season, and then Felix Jones maybe got a bit fed up with that too. So getting a coach like Larkham, he was never going to come in and accept, you know, that he's coming in, that this is my attack, I'm having full control. And I think we're starting to see signs of that. I mentioned Andrew Conway's try. You know, while it wasn't like a set piece move, I think, like, Andrew Conway, if you watch him track his run, but how far he came across the pitch, he wasn't afraid to get out of his system. You know, in Ireland, you're expected to sort of, you know, to stay in your role. Whereas that's a guy who's hungry, he's looking to get on the ball, targeting the back and the inside of the ruck. I thought it was really clever. And just from talking to a few players and a few people behind the scenes, the one thing that he's come in straight away, he hasn't come in and tried to rip up the script, you know, immediately. He wants to put a big focus on skills. And in fairness, that's been Munster's downfall in the last couple of years. When they've gotten to the business end of the season, their skills have just let them down. And that goes from 1 to 15. You see how Leinster do it, even when they scored that try against Connacht, the first one last week. It was the front row all combining. That's the targets that Munster need to set for all of their players. And it's getting people comfortable on the ball. And you've seen even Mike Haley is coming, becoming more involved from at first receiver from fullback. We didn't see a whole lot of him in that role. And that was something he was doing at Sale. So I think it will take time. Of course, it will take time. But I think the early signs are definitely encouraging.
OK. And in terms of the forwards, because obviously they've got it's been talked about a lot less, because I guess people just assume the Munster forward back was grand, and it was actually at the level that it needed to be. But it probably wasn't. It probably needed to step up a little bit. It probably needs to step up a little bit if they're not to be semi-finalists, if they're going to be winners of a competition, either this one or the league. They have a new coaching ticket in there as well, driving them. So how's that going so far?
Well, he's only been in, a couple of weeks. He obviously came in later with Graham Rowntree because he was with Georgia at the World Cup. The one thing about getting two coaches like this, apart from their reputation and obviously being household names, they're outside voices. And while I think some people were concerned that there was no homegrown coach on the Munster coaching staff for the first time, maybe it'd be a blessing in disguise. Maybe they're going to come in and see the flaws that have been going on over the last couple of years, because, you know, the likes of Gerry Flannery, like, and I'm not saying that that was the case, but when you're very close to it, it is, you know, hard to peel yourself back and look at it overall. And I think Rowntree is going to come in like Larkham, because Van Graan obviously coached the forwards with South Africa, but I think Rowntree wants to come in and make this his own pack as well, and sort of allow Van Graan to be that sort of, you know, almost a director of rugby type, which was probably the aim when he came in initially. So, yeah, look, I think you know what you're going to expect. You've seen Rowntree's packs, particularly working with the Lions, and he's worked with Peter O'Mahony and CJ Sander. They're going to be hard nosed, but I think Gerry Flannery had done a really good job with that Munster scrum. You're right, it's just about bringing it to that next level, because there's really solid foundations. There's a couple of really good young players coming through in that pack, and I guess if they end up getting Orji Snyman next season as well, like, that is massive.
Yeah, when those big South Africans arrive, that team changes completely. Is it next year, or is it January next year, or is it the end of the season?
My personal opinion on it would be, I'm not sure where the evidence sits. Like, I'm not sure how you could think right now that Munster are good enough to get past the semi-final. They've lost in the last three consecutive Heineken Cup finals. There's no evidence. And I'm going back to our earlier point about, you know, if the evidence isn't there, like, and this is my new approach now in terms of looking at this more generally, but they haven't added to their squad yet. Nick McCarthy has come down, but from Leinster, but that's not going to change a whole pile. So I think it will be next season. I think you'll have a full season of Larkham and Rowntree putting their stamp on things. And if Damian Dialende and Orji Snyman, as we expect, come in, they're game-changing signings. And I think they would be the difference in terms of Munster getting to a semi-final and a final, because we've seen in the last 3 years that there's a massive gap between, you know, getting to that final, and Munster just haven't been good enough.
So when do you expect them to arrive?
For next season, starting in the summer. Okay, so that both of them are in Japan for the rest of this season, picking up their nice fat paychecks. They didn't leave Shinjuku, unlike us.
It was a good idea for them.
We were gone.
Finally, for now, Ulster. Again, not a very easy pool. They've got Harlequins, Bath, Claremont. Again, what success here? They've got to get out of that pool for it to be considered success, but it is fairly much a pool of death.
Yeah, a minimum requirement, I think, is, you know, getting out of the pool. And we talked about, you know, the other problems is, you know, Dan McFarland is in now for his second season, so they'll expect to go well. I don't think there's much to fear from those two English teams. Claremont will obviously be very tough to beat, and I don't think anyone will beat them over there. I'm still trying to figure out where Ulster were. They were decent enough in Limerick last week without sort of impressing that much. They've got made a couple of good signings. You know, Sam Carter's come in, Matt Faddis. They're still trying to implement them. Ian Henderson taking over as captain. I feel like this is a massive season for Ian Henderson. I feel like I've been saying that for the last few years. You know,
he was supposed to be a player who dominated games. He was supposed to wreck games and be someone who was a leader, a totemic leader for the team, but he isn't.
Yeah, and Ireland, like in Joe Schmidt, really tried to, you know, get him out of his comfort zone in the last couple of years. They made him one of the leaders, especially with James Ryan coming in. But he started so well in the game against Scotland when everyone did, but he went missing in the Japan game and he went missing in the All Blacks game. And like, he wasn't the only one, now it must be said, but for a guy who was like such a good player, and a couple of years ago in the Lions, he was close to a test starter. He just doesn't have that consistency in his game, and you'd wonder now, him taking over the captaincy, is this the sort of kick up the arse he needs to, you know, say, this is now kind of my team, I have to take this over, because he's not getting any younger.
We had a what if conversation at one point along the way. What if they decided when he was younger that actually his best position was six, and that we were going to try and have one of those giant back rows? The issue was that we had loads. We were festooned with back rows and we had no second rows. We were trying to engineer second rows from sixes. But actually, in the international game, if he was a six and he was a third giant who had that ability in broken field, who had that ability to make tackles. Obviously, it's too late now in this stage of his career, but like, I wonder now if we could all go back, spool the clock back 10 years and go, well, okay, turns out when it comes to it in the World Cup quarterfinals, we're not going to be festooned with back row options. And you, my son, are going to end up being one of the best sixes that we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's a fair point, but I still think we've seen enough of Ian Henderson over the last few years, and he should have been good enough, I think, to be that second. Okay, he's not the monster that, you know, the Springboks have, but then again, who does? I think it's more about him getting his sort of attitude right and kicking on. I think he's definitely good enough to be a world-class second row, but it's having that consistency in his game.
Is it that there's not enough back alley in him? Is that it?
I think so. I think you would like to see a bit more of, you know, an aggression and a bit more of a dog in him. Like, and I think at Ulster, a lot of the time there's a huge reliance put on him when things aren't going well, and they've brought in Sam Carter now, an Australian, and, you know, we'll wait and see how good he is, but you'd hope that other guys are going to shoulder this responsibility. Rob Herring is coming into his own as a leader as well, because if it's not all expected on him, then I guess that pressure that's not on his shoulders, he might be able to thrive in it, because he is such a class player.
Yeah. All right, Keane, enjoy it this weekend. Thanks a million.
Cheers, sir.
As I said, two live games for you on Off the Ball on Saturday on News Talk. The first one is the Leinster-Benetton game, and then the second one is live from the Rec, and that will be Ulster's afternoon kickoff. We're bringing both of those live from 1 o'clock here on Off the Ball on News Talk. We're talking NFL with Keane Fahey next. And a reminder that, of course, that all our rugby coverage is in association with Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.